Energy Transition, episode number 62. Our topic today is mining more to save the planet. Irene Slav, Tammy Nimet, David Blackman, and our audience, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please. Good morning. Good morning. Let me share three charts. The first one, I know that David loved this one.
Yeah.
Because there are three parts in this picture. The first one at the left side is the mining process. The countries that mine the most of relevant energy metals in the world. The second is where these metals are processed, these minerals are processed. So in red is China. And at the right side of the picture, we have where the equipment systems are manufactured. And you see in red, China again, but a very strong position for China. And this is the challenge for the energy transition. Yeah. And we need more 300 new mines required to meet battery demand by 2035. It's a big number of new mines. And this the last one is to show the number, the total mineral demand for clean energy technologies scenario to 2040, and see that we need six times more than today in terms of minerals and things like that. Okay, let me be back here and we start with, please, Irina, if you allow me. We on one side we are pushing for high emissions mining, boom, and the other side to reduce emissions. It's a paradox.
It's a complete paradox. It's a beautiful paradox. Because it's not being said out loud, but the idea that in order to reduce emissions, you want to increase one of the most energy intensive and emission intensive activities in the world is just, I mean, the two are incompatible, and this is why it's not being talked about. Because I think the climate change narrative pushers, the activists, really like to pretend that you don't need to mine thousands, millions of tons of ore in order to get to the metals and the minerals, and that you then need to process them, which is very much also an energy-intensive activity. Even disregarding the fact that China dominates the processing capacity, you know, even if all of this could be produced locally in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, even if it could be produced locally, it would not be less energy intensive because of all this heavy machinery that consumes enormous amounts of energy in the form of fossil fuels, because electric trucks are not an alternative. They don't make heavy duty electric trucks at any scale that could be applied to mining of critical metals and minerals. So it's a complete mess. It's a paradox, and it cannot be solved. There's no way around it. If you want to reduce emissions, you have to increase emissions. This is what it comes down to. And now some activists, stop laughing, David. It's no laughing man. Now, what's funny, it's so ridiculous, is that some activists are now starting to talk about trade-offs. Yeah, we actually do need new mines in order to produce all the copper that we would be needing for all those EVs that we want to put on the roads. But we have to, we have to accept it. We have to live with it. No mention of the emissions that these new mines will generate, of course.
Only before Tammy and David comment this part, Luca.
Luca, hello, good morning.
Yeah,
we're Luca's late. In Italy, I believe, so good afternoon.
No, I suppose in
now
France.
No, he's in Switzerland.
Oh.
In Switzerland.
That's great. Tammy and David, I would like to comment some issues about this paradox that we are living in.
I'll let Tammy go first.
Well, I think it's interesting the timing of this discussion, because Irina had pointed us to an article in Mother Jones by Bill McKibben, and where he is talking about how we should just learn to appreciate the wind turbines, where you could see the breezes, and you know, we need to embrace this and reject the NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard kind of thing, because a lot of the activists, the real environmentalists, are concerned because it's like, I'm going to admire that windmill and all the slaughtered birds underneath it, or I'm going to really appreciate the dead whales on the seashore because I appreciate the wind turbines. And I thought there's been this layering of messaging. So it would just happens to time with this desire to improve permitting in the United States. Because as Bill McKibben knows, and he mentions it in his article, the environmentalists have been very good at manipulating the regulatory process in order to delay things for eternity. And in Canada in particular, we saw that with various pipelines and whatnot that's been stymied, you know, 6 to 10 years to get maybe approval or a rejection. And he brags about how he was key in getting Keystone XL rejected, and that was through litigation and everything else. So now he's saying, no, 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 environmentalists, don't use those tactics to slow down the building of wind and solar, because we need it and we should learn to appreciate it and so on. And it's a nice, maybe a temporary fix until we get to nuclear fusion. He throws that in there. But at the same time, we have Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan saying that maybe we need to use eminent domain in order to get these things built quicker. And we have Senator Manchin, who's putting forward a bill in the Senate around this time to talk about regulatory and permitting reform to make it easier for different things. So it's interesting, this timing of his article coming out to tell environmentalists to back off just when they're trying to get support to do this permitting reform, which they throw pipelines in there, but you know it's not meant for the pipelines. It's meant for constructing the wind turbines and the solar farms and stuff.
And David, are you surprised with this change of position from Mr. McKibben?
Mr. McKibben, Bill McKibben, one of the most radical left-wing environmentalists in modern times, who has opposed every new mining operation on the face of the earth for 30 years, suddenly writing at Mother Jones about the beauties of strip mining and blowing mountaintops off to get the copper and lithium. And, you know, it's just the most ironic thing really in the history of the environmentalist movement. I just laughed out loud the whole time I was reading the article. It was truly amazing. You know, as Tammy and Irina pointed out, I mean, they're continuing, the environmentalist movement is going to continue to oppose all of this, despite what Bill McKibben might write in Mother Jones, for crying out loud. Might as well be writing it in the Daily Worker or something. I'm sorry. It's just all tired. So ridiculous. Lithium is a great example. And Tammy earlier today circulated an article about the Thacker Pass mine, proposed mine for lithium in Nevada, out in the arid desert, Rocky Mountain areas of Nevada, where no one could possibly ever live, and the inhabitants are limited to snakes and lizards and ants, basically. But the environmentalists have held that mining operation up for probably 8 years now, opposing it every step of the way, making the permitting process more complex, filing lawsuits. There's another proposed lithium mine in a similar part of Nevada. uninhabitable area that has been held up for 4 years. It's called the Rhyolite Ridge Mine. It's been held up by the Center for Biological Diversity for 4 years now because there is supposedly 10 acres of an endangered subspecies of buckwheat. Yeah. Buckwheat.
Buckwheat.
That is adjacent to the, yes, to the site where the mine is located. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been coordinating with the Center for Biological Diversity to hold up that mining operation for four solid years. And that's going to happen in every proposed mining operation that comes up in the United States or in Canada or in Europe or any other part of the Western world, because that's how these folks make their money. These are conflict organizations. And if you take away the conflict, they can't make money. They can't scare people into giving them money. This is how they make their livings. So none of that's going to change, regardless of what Bill McKibben has to say in Mother Jones Magazine. And the thought that, you know, you're going to, I mean, you know, our government will be happy to get lithium and get copper from developing countries where the strip mining operations are all safely out of sight of the voters and not in their backyards, so they don't have to see it and don't have to think about it, and happy to have it all processed in China with the devastating impacts on the environment that we see occasionally in films and articles, because they don't have any environmental standards to speak of in China and Mongolia, where all this is happening. As long as it's out of sight from the voters and our news media won't cover it, our politicians in the United States will be perfectly happy to make our country dependent on China for our energy security. And that's where this is all headed. And, you know, it's kind of depressing, and it's really dangerous for our country and for the countries of Europe and for Canada. But that's where these politicians are planning to take us, whether we like it or not. And, you know, we all here do our best to get that message out, but there's not a lot of other people doing it. I mean, there are other people doing it. I don't want to give them short shrift. Robert Bryce is one who's doing brilliant work on this in this area. But it's just, you know, it's like David versus Goliath with, you know, those of us on this side up against the entire media behemoth on the other side. And it's a tough battle.
Great. Before we go to the next step, please let me show some comments from Luca first. To be fair, mining here is mostly electric already.
Yeah, okay.
Well, okay, that's true. Yeah,
that's true.
Fair point.
Yeah, good point. The second comment, Italian, French, speaking and loving Brazil. Oh, thank you.
I apologize for mislocating you, Luca.
And we have from Grand Final a comment here too. No, this one. No, sorry, this one.
When your goals are just to destroy capitalism, you must weaponize the emotions of the people, where facts are trivial and irrelevant. Well, exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. True.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting.
Well, yeah, because one of the things McKibben says in his article is that the system change is coming, but it takes a little bit of time. And the wind and solar and the sacrifices that have to be made with mining is just a small step towards the system change. And of course, in Mother Jones, what system change is he speaking of? But the end of capitalism and the installation of whatever Jacobin project he has in mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect that it's in Mother Jones. It's a Marxist publication founded by Marxists and run by Marxists for what, 80 years or however long it's been in business. I mean, that's exactly where that article should be published.
Mm-hmm. But the Western countries are moving from oil dependence from Middle East to China and Asia and other countries' dependence for minerals.
Yeah.
this is true. And how dangerous is this movement? Starting with Tammy, you did not.
Okay, so I pulled up the European Parliament's research office. They have a document about securing the EU supply of critical raw materials. And when you read through it, they're crazy what they're doing, because the EU mines only a small fraction of these things. And they go on about how China has, the EU imports 93% of its magnesium from China, 86% of its solar panels, 67% of the wind turbines, and the wind turbines that are manufactured in the EU, the component parts are probably made in China or use materials from China. So they talk about diversification, but it isn't really diversification, because if you're retiring your nuclear plant, which is like, you know, in Germany, where you're producing that energy domestically, but now you're just closing it before you've got anything to replace it, but you're replacing it with wind and solar that's dependent on materials from China, whether it's, as you pointed out, Armando, processed or the supply chain in some respect is controlled to a significant extent by China, then you're really just switching one dependency for another. And I really don't see how this is beneficial for the EU. What makes them think that China is going to be a better actor than Russia? I don't understand.
How do you see it, Ina? Is too dangerous for the world? Is this new dependence?
Well, I wouldn't talk about danger. I mean, they're doing it to themselves. You can't, as I said about Russia a couple of years ago, you can't antagonize your main supplier of whatever commodity it is so actively and so persistently and then be shocked when, they react. What did you expect them to not react? They're doing the same with China. Sammy said, they are becoming more dependent on China for it. At the same time, Ursula von der Leyen says we need to diversify away from China. Well, I mean, really.
At the same time, they're accepting the Belt and Road money to build train lines and shipping routes from China.
And they continue with the, with the belligerent tone of voice when it comes to geopolitics. You can't have it both ways. I mean, it's common decency.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the good cop, bad cop. Macron goes to kiss up and von der Leyen's there saying,
"Back off." That was such a
flop.
Such a massive flop. I couldn't believe they did it. But yeah, they are trying to have it both ways. They're trying to have their cake and eat it, and it's impossible.
Yeah.
But they keep trying.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
And every time there's a failure, what do? They double down on the same solution.
And blame capitalism.
Under the apparent belief beating your head against that brick wall again will produce a different result. It's the very definition of insanity. because they can't admit they're wrong, this is all a leading us down this road to a authoritarian socialist government system in the Western world. And if they admit they're wrong any step of the way, it's like Germany shutting down their nuclear plants in the midst of an energy crisis. Shut down their last three big capacity, reliable nuclear plants that aren't anywhere near their expiration day, right? And they do it because they can't admit any aspect of their policy is wrong. Because if they do, then voters start to question other aspects of it.
Right.
And that's when, if they're going to maintain free elections, these governments start getting voted out of office. And, I think most of these people in power realize that if they move to do away with free elections, that's a very slippery slope for them to tread down, and just in terms of their own personal security with the voters. And so, they don't want to take that step unless they absolutely have to maintain power. So, but they just can't admit they're wrong about anything. We see it in the United States, too, with Jennifer Granholm and you know, the refusal of the Biden administration to admit they're coming after your gas stoves, even in their next breath, they announce a new regulation coming after your gas stove. And now, as we discover today, they're going after your dishwashers next, folks. I mean, it's just, it's going to be this never-ending boiling of the frog. And unless enough people wake up soon enough, you're going to end up being boiled.
And it's very interesting now that you mentioned the gas stoves. Do you remember when people started sounding the alarm about a gas stove ban? The pushback was, this is a conspiracy theory.
It's a conspiracy.
Nobody is coming after your gas stoves. Well, yeah, here we go. Nobody's coming after your gas stoves.
Everything's a conspiracy theory until it isn't.
I'm waiting for them to change the term gaslighting because, you know, it has gas in it. And
right.
Yeah, well, it's a bad thing, so maybe they'll keep it, you know.
Maybe.
Well, that's
an additional
true, yeah.
negative connotation.
That's right. We have two comments. Please let me bring to our screen here. LinkedIn user, I suppose, is sure. I'm not sure that.
I think some of them are realizing it already. Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. I can't even begin to fathom how the leaders in those industries think.
I think some of them know.
Yeah.
I'd like to add something here. Like, you know, we're looking at this from the perspective of the hypocrisy of the environmental movement and the paradoxes and contradictions and so on. But one of the things I've been thinking about is the financing and how they want to shift the financing away from hydrocarbons to renewable stuff. And people and investment firms aren't going to invest in wind and solar if they know they're not going to get permits to build it. And so then those vehicles they'll be looking for some other vehicle to invest their money. And so there's a small window here for the wind and solar industry to get this investment. Otherwise, investors will say, well, I'm not going to get a return on that. Let's go to, let's invest in the oil and gas companies because I am going to get a return. So to me, this is another reason why Bill McKibben, of all people, is making this case that to shift the financing to make sure it can go to wind and solar and not to oil and gas companies.
Yeah. And that's why we see such a push in the Biden administration at the SEC to implement these ESG standards to basically will essentially require investment companies to invest in wind and solar and other projects that aren't necessarily going to pay a rate of return.
Right. And I mean, the ESG scores, the way they're set up, the mining companies, I think, are going to get a bit of a pass compared to other companies.
I think so, yes. Yeah. LinkedIn user equals Douglas Hardwick. Hi, Douglas.
Great question.
Uh-oh, Fernando, I can't hear you. Armando, God.
Armando. It's almost the same, no problem.
Sorry.
No problem.
What proportion of the Earth must be mined per unit weight of EV battery? The figure I heard is something like 500 to 1. Yeah, it's a big number. I don't know if it's 500 to 1. But yes, I mean, and that's just...
It's bigger.
Yeah,
it's all the things that go into the battery.
Yeah. Big number, really big number.
Yeah, and same is true for copper. You know, when those strip mines that you see, what's coming out of the earth is mostly just dirt. I mean, there's copper ore in it, but it has to be separated, and it's an awful lot of dirt weight per ounce of copper ore.
Yeah, that's right. Luca, the difference between the conspiracy theory and reality.
6 months. Yes, I've written that many times, actually.
Even
I think
less.
I may have originated that equation.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
Irina, is there an excess, let's say, too much unreal valuation of wind and solar energy? Is that it's an excess of valuation?
Oh, I don't know about valuations. I don't follow the financial market specifically. But as David said, the SEC is essentially going to oblige companies to invest in so-called low-carbon energy. And this is, I mean, if you're obliged to do it, you will do it. And there are other incentives, of course. And there's reputational management. You know, if you want to have a good reputation, you will buy wind and solar energy for your business activity. So I think there's a hype about wind and solar. It's as simple as that. It's a bubble, and it will burst sooner or later. I think there are already leaks from this bubble. My favorite example is once again BP and its realization that its low carbon investment strategy was not paying off. But it's not just BP. There have been outflows from low carbon ETFs in the past year. There have been outflows from traditional ETFs as well. But the very fact that some people are leaving these investment vehicles goes counter to the argument that they offer better returns. Actually, there are researchers who have proved that these ETFs and other investment vehicles do not offer higher returns. In fact, they offer lower returns, but higher fees. I don't know. It's probably because it's more climate friendly. So I think this is a bubble. This is going to burst even before, possibly, the actual shortage of metals and minerals hits home. Because I'm seeing more and more people from the mining industry, from the commodity trading industry, warning about a copper shortage.
Yeah.
And mainstream media are reporting on it because they can't not report on what Profigura's COO says. But it seems, you know, the usual people who talk about the transition just keep talking about the transition as if there is no danger of any kind of shortage anywhere along the supply chain.
Yeah.
They just ignore it. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is why the bubble is going to burst.
Well, I think also about the Siemens and the Vesta concerns about their warranty costs, because they were significantly higher than they had projected, which That's created it. These enormous losses because they wear out much quicker than was anticipated. So they say that the wind turbines will last maybe 25 years, but they're wearing out within 10.
Yeah.
Some cases less than that. And, you know, those maintenance costs are incredibly high, which is, you know, that affects your budgeting and what all these things will cost. So you're right, Irina. I think the bubble is beginning to show some signs of bursting, but there's been this push, you know, with the Inflation Reduction Act and all of these EU subsidies and everything to go into that. But again, if there's regulations preventing you from building it, where will all that money go?
Right. And exactly. And where your early retirement, the other, as it flows downstream in the process, right, then you're getting that much faster to the crisis that's looming on retirement and disposal of these turbines and 150-yard long blades and the 700-foot tall towers and the enormous concrete pads that it all stands on. You have to figure out how to retire and dispose of all of that without creating another environmental disaster, right?
Yeah, especially now that these huge ones are breaking down after about a year of operation.
Yeah.
Totally shocking for everyone.
I'm surprised, yes.
Well, you might be interested to know the EU is reviewing its battery recycling policy, and it's going to include EV batteries, saying that they have to, it'll be mandated to recover X percentage of cobalt, X percentage of whatever in these batteries. They don't even know how to do it. And the EU is going to mandate it?
To recover.
Like,
complicated.
Yeah, because they need to feel good about themselves.
We've mandated it. We're going to feel good. We're ordering them to do it.
We did our job. We did our job. Now it's your turn. Find a way to do it.
Find a way.
Figure it out.
It's easy.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah, let's see. Look again. Yeah, that's a good one. You mentioned this, no, Tammy?
Yeah. It's an awesome, awesome report. I highly recommend people checking that one out because he has all the numbers in a really readable way, presents it, and it's really good.
I'm following David since, I don't know, the year 2019 or 20 when you start writing, David. But I remember that you wrote some articles about minerals and things like that.
Yeah.
Before we start our videos 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So how do you compare that time 3 years ago and today?
Yeah, well, you know, it is changing. I mean, more and more people become aware of the issue as time goes on. I became aware of it just because of a company that reached out to me with a problem that they thought might be interesting, and I thought it was, and wrote about it, and that made me aware of a mineral called antimony, which, you know, most people haven't really even heard of, but which, like copper, very similarly to copper, is in everything. Every gadget we use, every television set, every automobile, it's in everything. And it's in very limited quantities. And we don't produce any of it in the United States. And we don't produce any of it because we can't get the permits for the mining of it. You know, and that was, gosh, in 2020. And so I thought, this is kind of important. I wonder, you know, what's happening with the other metals. And I started studying on that and researching and writing about it. And but I mean, I'm certainly not the first, obviously, in the media to pick up on the issue. But boy, today, a lot more people are talking and writing about it than before. And even in a very reluctant mainstream media establishment, you see even stories on 60 Minutes now about the issue surrounding lithium in the United States. So, you know, it's good. It's been a very slow process of people kind of realizing that we've got a train wreck coming on mineral critical energy mineral supplies, and there's a lot of these minerals, including antimony and lithium and cobalt and copper and silver and nickel. And I mean, there's just this wide array that you have to have incredibly increased quantities of in ways that are unprecedented in human history. And nobody in the renewable energy space really wants to admit it's even an issue. You don't want to talk about it. And exactly. If you talk about it, you're attacked. And I've been attacked a lot over the last few years, but that's fine too. Anyway, it's different now. A lot of people are talking about it, and even Bill McKibben in Mother Jones magazine is talking about it. And I guess that's a good thing.
My concern is that though in these conversations and acknowledging that there are going to be supply chain issues and that it will require a lot of mining and must respect the environment and so on, is that it plays into the narrative that we really have too much, that we shouldn't be driving cars, that we should be walking, we should be living in our 15-minute cities. And I feel like that's what Planet of the Humans was about, was to say that, you know, all of this stuff is bad. Our modern way of life is bad, and that we need to change how we live. And maybe this is part of McKibben's system change, that we all go back to living in hovels or something. I don't know.
Well, and wasn't that really the shocking thing about that article, is that he wasn't talking about that, right?
He did a little bit, but it was overshadowed. Right, because who are his supporters, right? It's the middle class. And you're going to tell the middle class person to give up their nice house and their car and everything else. No, it's that, which is the bait and switch, right? And we can just replace one form of energy for another. And then when you realize you can't, well, now sacrifices have to be made. Whoops. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's beginning to surface, this talk about lifestyle changes. A couple of surveys recently came out that suggested people are unwilling to sacrifice their lifestyles, even a little, for the good of the planet and of the climate. That's not very encouraging for the transition pushers, but I'm sure they'll be working on it.
Oh, right, yeah. Which is we'll the be part of the lot
more about energy demand, yeah, as opposed to source of energy.
Tell right. me, this let's see, growing can divide among environmental activists and can impact the energy transition. You see that can be impacted.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting situation where you have the environmental movement fracturing to some extent, right? I mean, it's a big umbrella or a big tent that includes all the different environmental groups, and they're united to some extent when they can target big oil or something. But once you get into the details of what it means for birds and the greater environment, then you start to see these fractures. And I think this is why McKibben was kind of writing to try and get the real environmentalists, the radicals, to back off a little. And I mean, I think they see that as a fracture point for the transition because, you know, critics like us can maybe say, well, this is a problem with the environment. You guys are being hypocrites. And this could derail to some extent their transition plans if the people realize that they are being hypocritical.
Tammy, some comments for you here from Luca.
Tammy,
yeah. Oh, absolutely right.
Peak oil freaks.
Oh my. Yeah.
Peak energy. We're going to be a peak energy soon. Yeah. I can just imagine that narrative coming out.
Can't wait to see that study.
Yeah.
And SRB, Luca. Yeah, because Luca repaired the information about
500,000.
Page 7.
Mark Mills' report on page 7. Okay, 500,000 pounds per EV battery pack. And an EV battery pack weighs what? A ton? Got to be close to it. So that's about what? 250 to 1?
Oh, great.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Excellent. Okay, people. Thank you so much. It was a nice Monday again. As thanks. David, and my name is Armando, not Fernando, please. And to end our day, please let me show a very, very short video about us. And so you are finalizing. Have a good day. I'm starting the video here.
Wow, we talk fast.
We have a lot to say. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye.